Good evening. So here we are. In fact, it's the last session before Pesach. Now, I wrote in my email... One second. Okay, so this is our last meeting before Pesach, and so we are looking at a discourse that was said in 1957, Tafshin Yud Zayin, and it was said on the evening of the second night of Pesach. Now, I'm actually not, I don't know exactly the circumstances in which it was said. The evening of the second night of Pesach is the second Seder outside Israel. And so I'm actually not sure. I hadn't noticed that detail.
Hi.
So I'm not quite sure about the circumstances, whether the Rebbe said this at the Seder or it was at the evening prayers before the Seder. It's something that I would have to try and find out from someone. So I'm sorry I haven't got that information now. Now, the verse, which is the pasuk, which is the entrance into this discourse. You see, every ma'amar chassidi, a chassidic discourse, chassidic kabbalistic discourse, is really sort of opening a window to a realm of spirituality. And the key to open the window is a pasuk from the Torah, or it might be something else, a phrase from the sages sometimes. But that is the, from the Midrash. But that is the key. And the key in this case is verse 29 on the page that we have, which is actually verse 29. This is in Parshat Bo, where we have the account of Yetziat Mitzrayim, the account of the Exodus, and it's actually the moment of the complete denouement of the whole story. Vayihi b'chatzi halayla. It was at midnight. V'Hashem hika chol b'chor. And God. Now that's an interesting phrase. And God. And the Midrash and the discourse are going to comment on that. And God hika chol b'chor. God smote every firstborn be'eretz Mitzrayim in the land of Egypt. Mibchor paro hayoshev al kiso, from the firstborn of Pharaoh sitting on his throne. Ad b'chor ha-shevi asher b'veit ha-bor, right down to the firstborn of the captive who was in the pit, in the prison. V'chol b'chor behema, and even every firstborn animal. V'yakam paro laila, and paro got up in the middle of the night. Hu v'chol avadav v'chol Mitzrayim, he and all his servants and all of Egypt. V'tihi tz'aka g'dola b'Mitzrayim, and there was a great outcry in Egypt. Ki ein bayit hashein sham met, there was no house in which there wasn't someone who had died. Vayikcha leMoshe ulaAaron laila, and he called to Moshe and to Aaron at night. Vayoman, he said, kumu tzu mitochami, get up, leave my people, gam atem, gam bnei Yisrael, you and the whole bnei Yisrael, the whole Jewish people, uluchu ivdu et Hashem kedabechem. Go and serve God as you said. Gam tzonchem gam bekachem k'chu, also your flocks and your cattle, take ka'asher dibatim, as you said, velechu, and go. Uverachtem gam oti, and you should also ask for a blessing for me. While you're making the offerings, have me in mind as well. All right, so of course this continues, but that is the actual moment of the Exodus, and the discourse begins with those words, Vayihi b'chatzi halayla. And so there is a nigun which is sung in order to enter, so you have it on the, it's printed double-sided, I think, so I hope that doesn't make it difficult. Yes, so you see there, page 144.
Yes.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
Okay. Just can I ask before you do that?
Yes.
Was Paro then not the firstborn?
Paro was a firstborn, I think Rashi tells us, but Hashem kept him alive in order that there should further be a further level of destruction of the power of negativity with the crossing of the Red Sea. So Paro was kept alive in order to witness that.
I think
there is a tradition from the Midrash that he was a firstborn. Yes, yes.
I just understand from this that every firstborn, including Paro's firstborn, that is Paro's son.
Including
Paro's firstborn.
That's good me.
Presumably.
Yes, yes.
Not Paro's.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, but I believe that the sages say that he was also a firstborn, but he was spared in order that he should see what happened at Kriyat Yamsuf. It's the whole account of going out of Egypt is very much an issue of perception. It was important that the Jewish people, the Bnei Israel, should perceive that it was God who was taking them out of Egypt. Otherwise, if God just wanted them to come out of Egypt, so in the very first moment, Moshe could have showed the miracles to Paro, if you want to read that right, the story, and Paro says, oh, what a wondrous thing, yes, okay, off you go, do what you like. But he didn't. And one of the reasons given is for the sake of the perception for the sake of the perception of the Jewish people themselves, because if we would have just gone out of Egypt, we wouldn't have noticed that there's anything divine about it. Oh yeah, Pharaoh was a very nice guy and he let us out, you know. So there's different levels. The Kabbalah has this term klipa. Klipa means the shell of a nut. And the nut is, the kernel is something positive, and the shell, on one level, the shell also has a positive purpose, because the shell protects the nut. But sometimes the shell becomes more problematic, and we're not able to get to the kernel of what things really are. So there has to be shvirat haklipot, there has to be the breaking of the klipot, or sometimes we talk about aliyat haklipot, the elevation of the klipa. Within the klipa there's a divine spark which is keeping it alive and giving it a force of negativity, but by elevating it, the divine spark, the spark ascends to the olam ha-tikun, to the world of repair, and the klipa disappears. So that's another way of dissolving the klipa. Now, there are klipot in our own perception. There are, as it were, inner klipot, and one aspect of our own personal inner problematic dimension is our own ego. And you could see our own ego as being the shell around the inner identity of the individual, which is the Nefesh HaElokit, the divine soul. And in order for the divine soul, the Nefesh HaElokit, to be expressed, one has to break through the klipa. And so there has to be that breaking of the klipa. Now, in the case of Yetziat Mitzrayim, that took place through the process of the makot, of the plagues, one after the other. Among the people who were impressed by these makot were the Jewish people themselves. And they were able to see, the Egyptian sorcerers, they were able to see, Etzba Elokim hi, it is the finger of God, they said, when they claim one of the plagues of Shechin, and the Jewish people themselves were also in that process. Their inner Jewish dimension, their spiritual dimension was revealed. But a key figure is Paro. Because Paro, in a certain sense, hello, Shira. Paro represents a quality which is also internalized in Hasidic thought. Because the letters Paro make the word Ha'oref, the back of the neck. And it's as if Paro is Ha'orev Shalanu. It's part of our own structure, that we have a Paro inside us. And that Paro does not allow what we think of in our mind to reach our heart. So a person might have a cerebral image, which is very profound, but the heart remains cold. What does it mean, cold? The heart is still focused on very ordinary things. Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak, the 6th Chabad Rebbe, he describes the following situation, that someone is studying an extremely profound Hasidic text, and he's really very inspired, tremendously moving. And suddenly someone looks into the room and says, would you like a cup of tea? And in that moment, this inspiring discourse disappears. And at that moment, what he wants is a cup of tea. So the physical reality takes over. This is the paradox of the human condition. Rabbi Dov Be'er, the 2nd Chabad Rebbe, lived around 1815. He puts it in a more sharp way. He says, imagine that there is someone who is praying. Hu mitpalel, he's praying with deep kavana, deep feeling, which comes through a profound hitbonenut. He's been contemplating very deeply. And as a result, he really feels inspired. And he's singing. He's singing the prayers, and it's really something beautiful. You could record it, if it wasn't Shabbat. You know, it's a very special thing. However, this is the picture that Rabbi Dov Be'er paints. There's someone else in the synagogue who is not very pleased and finds it rather a nuisance to have this chap singing away at the front. And he says, excuse me, could you be quiet? Now that is like the thermometer of whether the ego has dissolved away or whether it's become more forceful in this process. And so the author there describes the process of hitbonenut like cooking a pot on the stove. And so it gets heated up. But also whatever is not such pure aspects, which are at the bottom, they start frothing up in the scum at the top, which has to be taken away. So you can have, through this process of hitlaavut, can also be rather negative features as well, which raises a lot of interesting questions. However, we are going to go back to the discourse of Leil Beit Chag HaPesach, the night of the second day of Pesach, and it's 1957, and the melody with which very often, not always, but very often, the discourse would be introduced goes like this. Oh, yo, 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 ya, 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 yo. Oh, yira, yira, yo, yo, boom. Oh, yam, bo, ya, yam, ba, yam, bam, boom. Oh, yira, ram, bam, ho, yira, ram, bam, boom. Oh, ho, ya, yira, ram, ba, ya, ya, ho, ya, yira, ram, ba, yam, ba, yom. Ha yiri damba, ha yiri damba, ho yamba, ya ya yiri damba, ho ya yamba, yiri damba, ho ya ya, ho ya ya, yom. Vayhi v'chatzi alayla, and it was in the middle of the night. V'havaya hikakol b'cho, and God smote every firstborn. V'ita b'midrash, and we learn in the midrash. V'chol makom shenema v'havaya, everywhere where it says, and God. Yesha? Okay, it's the third line. It's the second line. Halfway through the second line. V'chol makom shenema v'havaya, wherever it says, and God. Notice we're saying Havaya, that's a sort of convenient way of saying the name Yudke Vovke and indicating that's what you mean, rather than Hashem could be many different names of Hashem, but Havaya means that name Yudke Vovke. It's just a rearrangement of the letters. Kai Alhu Ubedino. The Midrash, which often uses quite anthropomorphic terminology about God, says it's God and his Bet Din. Right? So depicting as if there's God, the head of the Bet Din, and the Bet Din. Now, this interprets this idea in Kabbalistic terms, and Hasidic terms. The Yesh Bazeh, Midat HaRachamim, this means the attribute of mercy, which means Hashem, Umidat HaDin, and the attribute of severity, Bet Dino, his law court, his Bet Din. Okay, so we have two qualities. In other words, there are two qualities. The quality of mercy, Midat HaRachamim, and the quality of severity, Midat HaDin, the attribute of judgment. Because since there had to be below, in our world, what was happening at Yetziat Mitzrayim, at the going out of Egypt, there was Nagof leMitzrayim, there was the smiting of the Egyptians, V'rafo leYisrael, and the protection of the Jewish people. So in other words, there are two opposites at the same time. The Nagov hu mitzad midat hadin, the smiting comes from the attribute of severity, v'rafo mitzad midat harachamim, and the protection of the Jewish people is from the attribute of mercy. Lazor, therefore, hutzlach liot gam lemaila, there had to be also above, hakshituf vahitkalalut, the sharing and the absorbing together, the shnei hakavim of the two lines, Chasadim u'gvurot, kindness and severity. Now, in the pattern of the Sefirot, there are the two lines where we have, on the one hand, we have Chesed, and the other Gvura, and that extends all the way down the system of the Sefirot. So we have. It's okay if it's in Hebrew. Chesed on the right and Gvura on the left, and this line, you see there is also a central line, but here we have the right hand side and the left, so there's also the central line, and at the bottom is Malchut, which we'll write in here. Malchut, kingship, and we also have at this point we have Netzach and Hod over there also on the left, and in the center Chesed Gvura. Then we have in the middle we have Tiferet, and in the middle lower down, I'm sorry, it's not very good positioning. That's Yesod. So this Chesed should really be a little bit higher up, and then so put Chesed over there. So, and then above there are higher levels. So here we have Chesed and Gvura. So this is the side of Chesed, and that's the side of Gvura, and then there's the central line. Chesed, Gvura, Tiferet, Netzach, Hod, Yesod, Malchut. Now, what it's saying here is that the flow which comes down in our world, and so there is the sense of what is actually happening in the world below, in the world below there has to be a hashba'ah, there has to be a flow which includes in it both elements of kindness and elements of severity. And so therefore from above there also has to be that, and that's why we have Havaya, Yudke Vavke, Ubed Dino. So there are the two concepts when it's speaking about it on that higher level, and that they are going to come down together. Now, I must say, this discourse is all about the nature of the flow which is coming down into the world at this moment of Yetziat Mitzrayim. And it goes into it in considerable Kabbalistic detail. So this is just beginning that concept, and we'll try and see how much of it we are able to follow together.
On your diagram, would Havaya be on the right side and Beit Dino on the left? As if
Havaya is on this side, and his Beit Din is over there.
Oh.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, because Chesed is Avram, I mean, in the Kabbalistic diagram.
Yes, so like, well, here it's, well, you see, Yudke Vavke, in the Midrash, it contrasts Yudke Vavke, Havaya, as Midat HaRachamim, the attribute of mercy, and usually Elokim is Midat HaDin, the attribute of severity.
Yeah.
Now, the Midrashic terms translate into Kabbalistic terms. And we can see them as different modes of communication. The Midrash is a way of speaking. Are you okay?
An Olympic gold medal.
The Midrash is a way of speaking to everyone. A child can learn Midrash. The Kabbalah puts things in more esoteric terminology. So one can actually translate certain Midrashic terms into Kabbalistic terms that you would find in the Zohar, for example, or other Kabbalistic writings. So Midat HaDin, Midat HaRachamim is a very common exoteric term, whereas when you come to speak about the Sfirot, that's already more esoteric as are other concepts that we will encounter here. Now, so therefore, there had to be the joining of two opposites. V'zehu gam ken, right, this is six lines down, v'zehu at the beginning of the line. V'zehu gam ken asher katuv v'yihi b'chatzi halayla. That's also what it's written, it was at midnight. Midnight has this quality of joining two opposites. D'nehine harege d'chatzot halayla, the moment of midnight, it joins the two halves of the night. Chatzi alayla arishona, this incidentally is a hanacha bilti muga. You see at the top? So this is hanachat hamalaktim, hanachat hatalmidim, whose first language is Yiddish, usually. So, and the Rebbe said the discourse in Yiddish. So they learnt it by heart, hearing it once. On the night of Pesach, they couldn't write. So they are, and even if they could, the intensity of listening to a discourse is one of total concentration. So they learn it by heart at this first time hearing it. And then they write it down in Hebrew, which is the tradition that the discourse is then written down in Hebrew. But it was not edited by the Rebbe, which some discourses are, which we study here, are edited by the Rebbe. So therefore, there might be odd qualities in the grammar and in the like this phrase, Chatzi alayla harishona. So, okay, but right now, so Chatzi alayla harishon shekodem chatzot, the first half of the night, which is before midnight, v'chatzi alayla hasheni she'achalei chatzot, and the second half, which is after midnight, the chatzi alayla harishon u'bchinat gvurot, the first half of the night is gvura, is severity, v'chatzi alayla hasheni u'bchinat chasadim, and the second half of the night is chesed, is kindness. Delachein anu roim demechatzi laila rishon, that in the first half of the night, hinei b'chol rega v'rega nase yoter choshech, it becomes darker and darker every moment. And now it's actually written down in Yiddish. Es vet als finstere und finstere, it becomes more and more dark. Liyoto b'chinat gvurot, because it's got the quality of severity. ובחצי לילה השני, and in the second half of the night, הנה בכל רגע ורגע, every single moment, now he doesn't say it becomes lighter and lighter. He says, נעשה קרוב יותר לעמוד השחר. It comes closer to dawn. ובמילא, ותהלץ ליכטיגר וליכטיגר. And therefore, in some sense, everything is becoming more and more light. Although there's another phrase in Hebrew as well as English, that the darkest moment of the night is before the dawn. So just to say that it gets light in the normal sense would be a problem. But the second half is of the night is seen as a time of chesed. And the Talmud actually says that anyone who gets up in the second half of the night, the middle, assuming you went to bed the first half of the night. So anyone who gets up in the middle of the night, that means 2-3 o'clock in the morning, and studies Torah, Chut shel chesed nimshach alav. There is a thread of kindness which is flows down upon him. So the second part of the night is seen as this atmosphere of chesed. V'harege dechatzot, and the moment of midnight, inyanohu lechaber shnei chatzai leilot. Its quality is to join the two halves of the night, haynu achibud dechatzadim uvorod, to join together kindness and severity, as they are in the way of night. Now that's an interesting quality. Hainu shnei akavim. That means that these two lines of chesed and gvura, the chasadim ugvuron, kumo shehem besfirat hamalchut, as they are in the sfira malchut, because the sfira malchut, that represents a certain aspect which we are calling here night, and from Malchut comes into existence the world. So there is this quality of these two dimensions joining together and being unified. Now, this idea of Chibur HaFechim, of joining together of opposites, is a very important characteristic of the teachings that we explore from the late Lubavitcher Rebbe, because it is, and going back into Kabbalistic thought, because it's precisely the joining of opposites which gives our lives both the paradox and the meaning that there is at every moment of our existence. And that indeed we are joining together opposites in all kinds of different ways. We're joining together gvul and bli gvul, finitude and that which is infinite. And in particular here, chesed, kindness and severity. Vihine, the second paragraph. Vihine, behold, bichdei sheyeh chibur shnei akavim. In order that there should be a joining of these two lines, humitzad gilui or naale shalemayle mishnehim, it is through the revelation of an exalted radiance which is higher than both of them. Now, this is a general principle that in order to join together two opposites, you need some kind of higher quality which joins them together. Like a king and his princes, the princes in themselves may have terrible political arguments between them, but when they are in the presence of the king, they are all stumm, and they look obedient and as if they are working together. Oseh shalom bimromav, God makes peace in his high places. We actually come to this quote a little bit later. Shaharei b'nivraim, because among created things yefshar liot chibur shnei akavim yachad, it's impossible to join together these two opposite qualities of kindness and severity. The b'nivraim, because among created beings, harizeh be'echad mishtei panim, it's in either one or the other of either one aspect or the other. O nagof, either it's causing destruction, or rafo, or it's protecting and healing. Ubichdei shiyachibur shnei akavim, in order to join those two opposites together, hu al yedei gilur or naalesh lemaile mishneim, is through revealing a higher radiance above both of them. Dezeu vayehi b'chatzi alayla, and that's why it says it was at midnight. The Az Yeshno Gilui Or Nada, because then there's a revelation of an exalted radiance. Shalamaila Mishneh Kavin, which is higher than the two lines of kindness and severity. Kamaima, as the saying, which is there in the Midrash, sorry, in the Zohar, if you look in note 5. Bapalgut Laila, at the middle of the night, Kutshabrichu Ata, God comes Liishtasha, to delight himself with the tzaddikim. So that idea, or maybe with Matronita Shelo, with the Sfira Malchut. So at midnight there is this sense of joyfulness coming from God. Umavua b'chama mekomot, and it explains a number of times, the gilu zed kutche berichu atal ishtasha. This revelation of this quality called in the Zohar, God coming with joyfulness. Lishtasheh is like to play. And this is a term used in Kabbalistic literature about Hashem at this exalted level. Hu gilui svirat ha-tiferet. It's the revealing of the svirat tiferet. Now notice tiferet is the junction of chesed and gvura. And Tiferet means splendor, and it's the point where they are both joined. Or Ulamaila Yotehu Gilui Svirata Bina. Now, if we take things higher, so I'm going to abandon a color scheme, so I'm just going to write in black. So on a higher level, it's Bina, which is usually put on that side. It is a very exalted quality, which is like Keter of Bina. So it's some high aspect, which is the Shashuim, the delight, the pleasure. The Mitzad Gilui Or Naleze, because of the revelation of this exalted light, Naaseit Kalaluchnea Kavin, that comes a joining of these two lines of kindness and severity. Valdelech HaMavuah, as is explained, if we go over the page, Hamshel V'fachad Imo, there is rulership and fear with God, Oseh Shalom Bimromav, he makes peace in his exalted realms. Now this is a pasuk in the book of Iov, in the book of Job. The Michael Sa Shel Mayim. Michael, the angel Michael, is the prince of water. The Gavriel is the Sa Shel Esh, is the prince of fire. And normally the fire and the water, either the water will put out the fire, or the fire will make the water turn into steam, and there won't be any water, there'll just be fire. Ve'ein mechabin zedzeh. But they do not destroy each other. Why don't they destroy each other? They don't extinguish each other. Behu mitzad gilui or. And that's because of a revelation of light, shelamayla mishneim, which is above both of them. Val derech moshe lemata. And as a metaphor below, b'shnei sarim, two princes, sheim ofchim zem zeh, who are opposite to each other, hinei kasher heim baim lifnei ha-melech, when they come before the king, hari mitzad gilui ha-melech, because of the revelation of the king, heimitachdim, they are unified, upoalim pu'latom, and they achieve their activities, kumo sheheim b'itachdut, as if they were, or as being, in unity. Even though really they don't feel like that at all, but the king brings about that sense of unity. V'al derech ze yuvan kam kan, and so similarly we can understand here, from this revelation of the Kudsha Berichu Atal Ishtasher, of God coming to delight, which means a revelation of an exalted radiance, there comes a joining and an integration of kindness and severity, as they are in the quality of night. Haynu b'sfirat ha-malchut, and that means in the sfirat ha-malchut, d'mitzad zeh nimshach gam lemata. And because of that, it flows also down into the world. Shiyeh naguf le-mitzrayim, that there should be the affliction, the smiting of Egypt. the force of negativity, v'rafol Yisrael, and protecting the Jewish people. Shehu mitzad gilui o na'ale, through revealing a higher light, hecha un hecha un noch hecha. Higher and higher and yet higher. Right? So, okay. Vehine. Now you see, the point is, in the mind of the hearer, we discussed last week the question of repetition in these discourses. And there's a sense in which the discourse is actually a journey for the person who is hearing the discourse and learning the discourse. There's a sense of a journey, and by the description of this upper radiance, which causes that unity of these two opposites, it's as if within the person's mind's eye, somehow something like that radiance is revealed. And that is, I mean, there's another level, there's another problem, if you like, when studying this kind of teaching, is that the person cannot relate to the idea which is being said, and it doesn't have any kind of tangible sense of meaning. But on the other hand, and that very often in Chabad teachings, there are attempts to bring mashalim, different kinds of metaphor, in order to try and understand concepts which are really abstract mystical concepts. But at the same time, there is some conceptual power within us that we are able to conceive that there is, I mean, all of these different levels are extremely exalted, radiance and spirituality and holiness. We are crawling around on the physical world. Now, it's very interesting what a range of experience we are able to have in our physical world. And there are all kinds of aesthetic dimensions and other kinds of sense of certain kinds of, worldly spirituality, or maybe taking us somewhat beyond the world. And here we are entering a dimension which the first concept in the first principle, if you like, in the whole Kabbalistic tradition, is that there are different levels of existence, and to be sensitive to that idea that there are different levels of existence, even if we're not able actually to see them, but our mind's eye is able to perceive them in the same way that we are sitting here in a room and there are electric lights in the room and there's an electric light in the middle of the ceiling, and we know that somewhere there is an electric wire which goes from this light fitting, and part of it goes to the light switch, and there is, it somehow joins another big cable which is probably in the road, and that big cable goes to a power station, and we don't necessarily know which power station, but somewhere there is a power station, and we're able to sit here and conceive of a whole network, especially if someone shows us an electrical map of the City of London, we're able to see this vast network, even if we can't actually see a single wire except what is there, that there's a light fitting here and there's a switch there and we can't see the wire, but we're able to conceive of it. So here too we are able to conceive. So now when one says power station, if you've ever been in a power station, that conjures up a certain, we had a school trip when we were school children, we went to a power station. Have you ever been to a power station? No. I suppose now maybe they look like a little box. Completely unimpressive. But when I went to Battersea Power Station, when it was still active, it really looked like a power station. So, yeah, but it's defunct, Battersea. I don't think they use it anymore. It looks like a power station, but it doesn't operate. I'm not sure what they use it for. So one can conceive that there is some kind of exalted radiance which is achieving this unity of opposites, which is actually the key to the going out of Egypt. Now, in the Lurianic writings, It speaks about the way that what is happening on the night of the Seder is that we are drawing down a higher level of chokhmah. There's a higher level of wisdom which is somehow flowing into the person. I think particularly because we eat matzah, which is going to be mentioned in the discourse as well. So there is some kind of spiritual transaction that takes place at a Seder night. And there is a sense in which this discourse is a preparation for that, that we should be able to have some idea that there is some kind of revelation which we are in the middle of, and the fact that we're sitting there with our family and the cooking and all the other practicalities of the Seder night, in fact it all focuses on the idea that we are experiencing this illumination. And that illumination is an illumination which joins opposites and enables the exodus to take place, where the exodus itself, the going out of Egypt itself, is a certain combination of opposites. Alright, so let's see this a little bit further. V'hinein behol. V'hine liyot asher atachlitz. Since the purpose is, the goal is, sheyihu sheyia amshacha mizeh lemata. This has to flow down. Asher lemata bolam azeh, that below in this world, yinaguf lemitzrayim v'rafo liyisrael. It should be a severe force against that which is negative, and Mitzrayim in this sense, Egypt, represents everything negative and bad in existence. V'rafol Yisrael, and protective to the Jewish people. Lazot hutzchach liyot, therefore, hagilui, this revelation had to be al yedei sfirat ha-malchut. The revelation had to be through the sfira malchut, because malchut is shoresh u'makor nivraim. It is the root and the source of created beings. So in other words, we are not only dealing with two supernal dimensions of kindness and severity, they somehow have to be channeled through Malchut, and it's from Malchut that there will be this hashpa'ah, this flow, in the right way, so that there will be the right kind of transfer of spiritual energy. And that's where we come to another one of the images of Pesach. V'dezehu masha katuv, and that's what it says, Ufasach Hashem ala Pesach, ha-petach. God skipped over the entrance. Now remember, there's the entrance of everyone's house, and they put the blood on the doorpost and on the lintel and on the shtei hamezuzot, and that was what defined the Jewish home, the petach. But this word opening, entrance, who's sfirat hamalchut, that represents the sfirah malchut. So therefore we're talking about a channeling of energy through the sfirah malchut, and the story, the account of the story which is in the Torah, is actually hinting at these spiritual dimensions. Omlam, however, ofan legilui b'sfirat ha-malchut, the nature of the revelation in the sfirah malchut. Now he's going to introduce us to two different concepts. I think I better make a new picture because this one is getting a bit messy, and I'm just going to use one color. So we've got Malchut here. We've got here Chesed and Gvura. And, alright, and Tiferet as well. We'll put that. Now, there is a flow which is coming down to Malchut, and then a flow from Malchut into the world. And so here we have the world, right? So just simplifying it. Yeah. Now there are two types of energy flow in this spiritual realm. And material physical images are used to explain it. One is called Hitlapshut, which we could translate as being enclosed. And that is one form of energy flow where the energy is actually clothed within the different levels which it passes through. So it's very intimately involved. And the other is called Derech Maiver. Now, Derech Maiver is a kind of less, it's a flow, but it is less tangled up in the different levels through which it flows. You might consider this, the difference between an electric current in a wire, where the electric current is actually in the wire. And if the wire is the wrong resistance, then it'll get heated up very much, could start a fire. Or water in a channel, which is just flowing through the channel and in a sense doesn't make any difference. It's just flowing through. It flows through without actually doing anything. So there's one kind of flow where there is some kind of direct effect all the time. And there's another kind of flow where it is, in a sense, more superficial. It's just flowing through. Now, these two kinds of flow have many different, one could write an article about the different ways in which this image is used in Hasidic thought to discuss different dimensions of spirituality within the person. Because there are aspects which are within us, which just are as a simple flow, derech maiver, without actually doing anything. But the point about the simple flow is that it's the same thing that you get at the end as you had at the beginning. It hasn't been changed. If you use the image of electricity, I've never heard anyone use that image, it just occurs to me now. But if you have the electric image, so the electricity, its voltage has changed. There are various things which have changed because of what it's been through. There was a transformer in the way, so this has happened and that has happened. So the electric flow is quite different down here than it was up there. Whereas the simple flow of the water, it's a simple, if that's an appropriate image, it's just a simple flow, and you've got the same thing here as you had up there. So what it's describing here is that in this process, the upper part is a simple flow. But when we come to Malchut pouring its effect into us here in the world, which is going to come about through the actual details of the Seder night, that's Hitlapshut. That's being enclosed. So Hitlapshut is there, and Derech Maiver, I should have drawn them opposite sides, Derech Maiver is there. So at this point it is just a flow down, whereas here it actually gets involved. Now there's a rather subtle exploration of this. And I think, and see, what he explains is that because this is a very intense energy, if it were in a state of Hitlapshut at this higher level, it's so intense that either it would shatter the vessels of the Sfirah. You see, in the background of Kabbalistic thought, there is all the time the idea of the shattering of the vessels, that a very high spiritual energy, if it's not mediated in the right way, can cause some kind of destruction. We're dealing here on Pesach, it's an extremely high energy which is being accessed. And so therefore it cannot flow, the energy has to move at in such a way that it is not going to damage the channels in between. Or if it doesn't damage those channels, the channels will stop it. And it won't be able to pass at all. So that is the problem over there, and that's why at this higher level, from an exalted level. Remember, we're dealing with an exalted radiance which shines from there, Bina, yes, or Atika of Bina, Keser of Bina. So there is this flow which is just flowing down. And it speaks about the different dimensions in there's the Mashkof and the Mezuzot, which represent all those aspects of the Sphere Malchut and the different dimensions beyond. So we're going to skip the rest of that paragraph on that page. And and so we've gone on to page 146. So we're on page 146. So, and therefore, the light flows through all the Sfirot, Omnam, the last line of that paragraph, however, often Hamshachato Bishtal Shulub, the way it flows into the downchaining of Sfirot, Eino B'Derech Hitlapshut, it's not in a way of enclosing, Kim B'Derech Maivel Bilvan, but just in a way of a flow which is not too closely associated with the passage, with the path through which it flows. Now, then we come Vehine, and here we're coming back into the Seder night. Vehine gam lamata ba'olam hazeh. Now, also below in this world, yeshlo gam ken chibur shnei akavim. There's also a joining of the two qualities of kindness and severity. V'hu al yedei shloshat hamatzot va'arba kosot. This is through the three matzot and the four glasses of wine. Now that's an important part of the Seder, that there are three matzot in front of the person making the Seder. Some people have it in front of every male. There are three matzot, and then there are the four glasses of wine, which every one man and woman have to drink. Omnam, however, the gimel matzot, the second night, because the three matzot, ubekava chasadim, matzah represents chesed, kindness. And the glasses of wine, hubekava gvuhot, that's the quality of severity. Omnam kamo sha'o nimshach lemato, but the way in which the radiance flows below, b'matzot b'kosot, in the matzah and the glasses of wine, eino b'derech maivel bilvad. It's not just as a simple flow, kiyim b'derech hitlapshut. It comes down in a way of actually being enclosed. That when we are eating the matzah and drinking the wine and the experience which is taking us over during that few hours of the experience of the Seder, the radiance is actually entering into us in some way and it's becoming part of our very being. It's a transformative effect. Vayinyan hu, and the subject is as follows. Dihine matzot. Sorry.
No, you missed them.
I keep missing. Right. Shahari avodah de matzot v'kosot, because the service of matzah and wine, who bepoil mamash, is really acting, really doing something. V'im kein, and therefore, since we're really doing something, harezeh b'derech hitlapshut, it means it is enclosed within us. Derech maiva, it's just, it's imperceptible. It flows down, it doesn't actually change anything. Whereas when we are doing something, so that means that we are actually involved. Vayinyan hu, and the subject is as follows. Dihne matzot hibakava chasadim. Matza represents the line of chesed. Why? Shahare matzah inyan. Because matzah inyana bitul kiyadua. Matzah represents selflessness. That's why the matzah is made of dough which hasn't rised. When you have dough, do you ever make bread? Or if you make a cake? That's, so the dough rises. So this rising of the bread, this rising of the dough in order to make ordinary bread is like the ego which is puffed up. The fact that when you make matzah, you have the flour and the water and you quickly bake it before it has time to rise, and it's a beautiful thing to see in a matzah bakery, the passion and the speed with which the matzah is being made. So they quickly, they knead the dough and they give it out in little balls of dough, and each person rolls a flat round matzah, and then someone makes the little holes in the matzah with a little machine which is cleaned all the time, and then they take it and they put it in the oven, and it's there just for a very short time half a minute, a minute, something like that, and then you have a baked matzah. And it hasn't had time to rise, and that represents the selflessness within the individual. So matzah represents selflessness. And selflessness, bitul shaykh lekava chasadim, selflessness relates to kindness. Why? The chashehu b'yeshut, because when a person is filled with his own self, azai einu sovelet zulato, he can't bear another person. And therefore he's angry, he's always very negative and severe. Why are you sitting over there? That's my seat. Whereas if a person has is humble and is selfless, they welcome every other person. They're able to see the goodness, the attractive aspect of every other person. But when the person is in a state of selflessness, he gives place to another person, which is the quality of kindness. That's why matzah represents kindness. Now, what about the glasses of wine? That's the line of severity, because concerning the svirot, wine represents the svira bina. The bina dinin mitarin minei. And there's an interesting aspect of bina, that from bina comes severity. Different kinds of judgment aroused from bina. Mitarin mina besofa. At the end of bina, there can be a quality of judgment. Even though bina in itself is lehitbonen, is contemplating, is evaluating, is thinking. Nonetheless, at the end of bina can be this quality of severe judgment which emerges from the process of bina, of understanding. Omnam. So 1 second. Ken, thank you. And similarly below, hari mitzada yayin, because of wine, naser the tichut adamim, wine makes a person's blood boiling, excited. Shemitzad zehu betokef hagvurot, and he gets very violent. A relative of mine who was in Jerusalem during the mandate, he said you could tell the difference of what kind of soldiers there were according of the British mandate, according to how they behaved when they got drunk. So he was a child at the time. So he said the British soldiers would get drunk and then would start fighting. But the Australian soldiers would get drunk and would take a handful of pennies and throw them in the air, and all the children would run for the pennies. Two styles of behavior when they're drunk. But there's quite a tendency. I think the Eastern European image of drunkenness is gvurot. You have to get to the other side of the planet to have chesed through drunkenness. Omnom, komosha och nimshach lemat b'matzot v'kosot, but the way that the radiance flows below in the matzah and the glasses of wine b'gashmiyut, in physical terms, hinei ohu b'derech itlapshut, this radiance is enclosed within the whole situation, b'chol amadregot shebein b'chvodo v'atzmo, all the levels from kvodo v'atzmo, the very essence of God above, flowing down ad hamatzot v'kosot, till you get to the matzah and the kosot, the light is in a way of maiver. Omlom kumotshu hu nimshach b'matzot v'kosot, but the way that it flows into the matzah and the kos, the matzah and the wine, hu behitlapshut, it is enclosed. So in other words, we're looking at some kind of mysterious wave diagram or power diagram of this flow of spiritual energy, which we are party to at the Seder night next Wednesday night. So, explaining a bit further, hinei k'shem shematzot inyanam chasadim, just as the idea that matzah represents kindness, k'mochenu gam pu'ulat hamatzot ba'avodah, that's also the effect of the matzah in the person's individual service. Now, there's the idea of eating matzah, but what is the eating of the matzah achieve? Hine yadu, it's known, and here gives the quote also to the Zohar, shematzah hu mechlad mehem nuta. Matzah is the food of faith. Va'al derech she'amru lazal. Now, the simple expression of matzah being the food of faith is because we trusted in Moshe and God, and we followed God, Moshe, out of Egypt, and we took our dough before it had time to rise, and then we cooked it into matzah. So the matzah symbolizes that when Moshe told us to leave the sophisticated country of Egypt and go into the Yelel Yeshimon, the howling desert, we went. We trusted that it's all going to be all right. So on that level, you could say a very practical level, the matzah represents our dedication and trust in Moshe and in Hashem. However, there's a further dimension to this. Valderech Shamru Lazal, the sages said, now here we have a whole set of images around the eating of wheat, and so the sages say, Eina tinok yodeh likho abba ad sheyitom tam dagan. Okay, developmental psychology. I don't know whether anyone's ever put this to the test.
Is it true?
That's right, we'll have to do an experiment with 100 babies. So a child doesn't know to call father until he tastes wheat. So in other words, children don't call their father a father, or maybe in general speak, until they've had some kind of solid food, which in general is some kind of wheat. Through the fact that he eats this wheat or corn, who kore abba, now he calls father. Even though his calling of his father, it's not because he really understands, this is my father. He doesn't understand anything about it at all. Mikol makom, but nonetheless, hare kriyato, the fact that he calls him, shekoye, abba, abba. When he calls his father, hu betokef gadol, is with great power. We're now on page, if you look at the footnote number, it's got footnote number 15 star as the first footnote. Then you know you're on the right page. So he calls this with great energy. Betokef ma'od. Betokef gadol ma'od. With very great intensity. Ad asher b'kriyazu, till with this calling, hine nafshay yatzah b'davro. His soul is really expressed in these words. Really, if you have a child calling, I would have thought imma more than mother, but more than father, but still. Okmochen, and similarly, it's actually a theme in the Talmud of children who have ga'aguim for their father. It's often mentioned in the Talmud. It even gives advice what to do if the child has great ga'aguim, great yearning for his father. Some piece of advice what to do about it. Interesting imagery of the child and father being together. Very modern. Ukmochen, and similarly, hugam ba'achilat matzah, similarly with eating matzah, shumech ledemhem nuta, which is the food of faith. The gam kasha eino havanava hasaga belokut. Even when the person doesn't understand godliness, which is what faith is a relationship with the divine, which is higher than understanding. Our understanding doesn't reach so high. Dezer mash Yisrael b'Mitzrayim hayu b'vchinat katnut abba. The Jewish people in Egypt were in a quality of katnut, and the word katnut abba is a reference to the katnut of wisdom, that their wisdom was in a very reduced state. Mikol makom, nonetheless, hare amuna, the faith they had, hu betokef gadol b'mo'od, is very strong. So therefore there's a similarity between the eating of wheat in order to make a child call his father, recognize his father, and the eating of matzah to make a person recognize God. Eila sheyesh, but he goes in that there is a difference between this. Yesh hefresh ben kriyat haba begashmiut, a difference in calling one's father in physical terms, lekriyat haba beruchniut, to calling one's father spiritually, meaning God. The Bechiyat Abba Begashmiot, in order to call one's father physically, Hinei Maspik Tam Dagan Bilvad. All you have to do, the child just has to have wheat or corn. Ve'einu nogea im ze matzah o shu hefech matzah. Doesn't matter if it's matzah or bread. Di'imu rak tam dagan bilvad. As long as it is the taste of some kind of corn product, wheat or barley or whatever, hinei al dedei ze naseh hayediya. Through that comes the knowledge, yodea likho abba, that he knows to call abba. K'maymer hazal. Now here's another image. Eitz hadat chita hayta. The tree of knowledge was wheat. So it was the eating of wheat which gave knowledge to Adam and Eve to know that they are naked and all the other things which are there. Ulozot hinei tam adagan mamshich yidiya. So therefore the taste of wheat or corn or barley or spelt draws down knowledge. But that's for physical father. Omnam be'inyan kriyat abba beruchniyot, but to be able to call one's father in spiritual terms, that means God. Now this is a very striking term, the next three words. Sheyia ha'ri'ya be'elokut. That a person will be able to see godliness in some inner conceptual sense. V'gam ha'kara bilvad, or just recognizing. Or gam emuna bilvad, or just faith. Right? It's touching here prophetic dimensions. You know, when you look in Mora Nevuchim by the Rambam, he talks about flows of effulgence, shefa, from God to the mind of the person. That someone once wrote an article, did the Rambam consider himself a prophet according to his own definitions in what he wrote? You know, so there's a you can also say a little bit the same for Yehuda Halevi, who writes in the Kuzari, different dimensions which all tend towards prophecy, the Hebrew language, the mitzvot, the Jewish soul, and ultimately being in Israel. So all those forces together combine to prophecy. So here there, it's like skating, just these few words, that a person should have some kind of spiritual insight of the divine, or maybe just recognition, not actually seeing, or just emunah, or faith. And it was in the merits of faith that our ancestors went out of Egypt. Now, for this, it's not enough just to have any old wheat. You have to have matzah with everything that goes into making the matzah. No wonder it's expensive. The matzah in the matzah who in yanahu bitul kanal, because matzah means selflessness. Vaha matzah naset mimayim v'kemach. It's made of water and flour. The mayim yordim migvol anamuch. Water flow from above to below, which represents chesed. V'gama kemach hu inyan chasadim. And kemach, flour, also represents kindness. As is explained elsewhere. Now you notice that whoever edited this put a lot of footnotes for most things, and they haven't put a footnote here because I assume they looked and looked all night and they couldn't find the reference. But somewhere or other, maybe we have better ways of searching now. We have digital books on many books on digital text, so maybe we'll be able to find. So that's right. So there we have both these elements of chesed, which are of kindness, which are in the matzah. So just as the matzah in itself is kindness, so also the effect of the matzah in our own service is also the idea of chesed. Now we come to the kosot. Gam hein. They too, k'shem shinyanim inyanam gvurot, just as they represent severity, kach gam pulatam b'avoda hu inyana gvurot, so too the effect of drinking the wine is severity. Dezel gam ken sham. Now, I think the severity means that we get drunk from drinking, and that can have a severe effect. Incidentally, we pour out 10 drops of wine from the second kos. And one of the explanations of that is that we are pouring out yayin hamashaker, the wine which makes one drunk, so that instead of that, it should be Yayin HaMasameach, the wine which makes one rejoice. So this is a tikkun, a transformation that we are achieving with the wine in the process of the Seder. That's also a reason why. Now, halachically, today, the matzah, eating matzah, is a mitzvah from the Torah, whereas drinking the four glasses of wine is a mitzvah midrabanan. So this is why the matzah is midoraita from the Torah. The oraita michochma nafka. Torah comes from wisdom, which expresses chesed, kindness. Va'akosot he midrabanan. The wine is from the sages. The Bechlalut Hu Torah Shebal Peh, which represents the oral Torah, not the written Torah, because the written Torah, Torah Shebiktav, the Torah Shebal Peh, and the oral Torah, Hu Chochma Ubina. That represents wisdom and understanding. Wisdom is Chesed, and Bina is Gvura. Kamo Shekatuv, as it says, Shema Bani Musa Avicha, Ve'al Titosh Torah Timecha. Listen to the Musar of your father and don't leave behind the Torah of your mother. Musa avicha hu Torah shebiktav. The Musar of your father is the written Torah. Shubchinat chokma, which is wisdom. Chokma, father. Umosa amecha. Now it says Musa imecha instead of Torah timecha. Yeah, nechon. You're right. You should be there with me. Edited. And the, would make the Hebrew. Umusai mecha, who told us about the Torah timecha, who told us about Peshub Chinat Abina, which represents understanding because Av is Chokhma and Aim is Bina. Vuchokhma Bina, Bina, Hiwushnei Kavin, the Chasadim Gvura. Wisdom and understanding represent the two lines of Chesed, of kindness and severity. So similarly with these two qualities, okay, so that is, so this flows through, and it comes, we have, so you see the radiance actually comes from much higher up, from Hashem b'chvodo v'atzmo. So there is this quality of godliness way above, way beyond, which is flowing down in a way of maiva without being changed. And then when we eat the matzah, so we have the three matzot, and we have the four glasses of wine, that's when it becomes part of us in a way of hitlapshut. So it's describing a kind of a long process of this radiance flowing down in a simple flow till it comes to us. Okay, so this is what we have read so far, is an explanation of the Seder, and something that, if we remember it next Wednesday night, we will hope it will sharpen our possibility of experiencing it in these terms. Now, the last paragraph concerns the future. V'hinei k'tiv, now it's written, b'mei k'mei tzeitcha me'eretz mitzchayim arenu nifla'ot. Like the days of your going out of Egypt, I will show you wonders. The gam latid lavo, because also in the future, yum shacha or shalemailim yishtal shalot, will be drawn down an infinite radiance beyond the down chaining of worlds, lemailim mishnei akavim, above these two lines of kindness and severity, v'yum shach lemat bitlapshut, and it'll come down into us, enclosed within us. V'od yoter da'arena niflaot, and even more so, that we will see wonders, she'od gilu or na'ale yoter, it'll be an even more exalted radiance, ma'asher b'yitzid mitzrayim, than there was in the going out of Egypt. The b'yitzid mitzrayim, because going out of Egypt, hinei av shenim shachaor shalamayim mishnei akavim, even though the radiance from above the two lines of kindness and severity was drawn down, mikol makom hu shayach, nonetheless it relates the kavin, it relates to those two lines. V'nimshach mimenu kavin, and there comes from that radiance two lines of chesed and gvura, of kindness and severity. The lachein mevuah b'chama mekomot, that's why it says in a number of places, in Hasidic texts, that b'vchinat b'chvodo v'atzmo, these words about the glory and essence of God, it gives like a quality what this is in the different levels of the Sfirot in the realm of Ein Sof. This is the Madrega of Tiferet HaNe'elam on the one hand, Umalchut the Ein Sof. You see, this is like reaching up into the worlds of the infinite and there too describing some kind of proto kind of Svirot. Mashe Ein Ken La'atid Lavo, whereas in the future, Yumshach will reach even higher. Yumshach Ha'osh L'mayne Mikavin L'gamre will be drawn down a kind of radiance which is completely beyond these lines, a radiance which is beyond worlds and structures of any kind whatsoever. Shiyeh Gilui Ha'atzmut Mamash, that the very essence of godliness will be revealed. The Gam Or Zeh, and this radiance itself, Yumshach L'mata, will be drawn down below. Behitlapshut, in a way of enclosing, but often pnimi in an inner way. V'achana l'zeh, and the preparation for that, hu avodah shebepesach, is the service of the actual festival of Pesach. Shalosh matzot, three matzot, four glasses of wine, which relate also to the three patriarchs, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and the four matriarchs, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah. Hinei al yedei zeh, and through this, nizke, we will merit, lahagilu de la'atid, to the revelation of the future. Sheyeh, now we come from that, on the last day of Pesach, the Haftorah, which we say only here, in the Haftorah of Achron Shom Pesach, Veheinif yado el hanaha. It's a Haftorah from the book of Isaiah, and it speaks about Mashiach. And it says that he will smite his hand on the river, vahikau l'shiva nachalim, and the river will divide into seven channels. The hashiva nachalim, and these seven channels of this messianic moment of the conclusion of Pesach, which looks to the future in the time of Mashiach, heim keneged, they correspond to the three matzot and the four glasses of wine, or the three avot, the three patriarchs and the four mothers. Sha'al yedei havodah, because through the service of the matzah and the glasses of wine, hinal yedei zeh nizkeh, so that we will merit lahayyud, to that meeting point with God, the kimeitzetcha me'eretz mitzchayim, like the days of your going out of Egypt, arhen niflaot, I'll show you wonders, shiyeh gilui ha'atzmut mamash, that the very essence of godliness will be revealed, which is higher even than that quality of bichvodo v'atzmo, it's right off the page, v'gam ozeh yumshach lamata, and also that radiance will flow below, behitlapshut, in an enclosed way, but often pnimi, in an inner way, within us, al yedei David malka mashicha, through David, King Mashiach, bimhera p'yameinu, swiftly in our days.